Welcome back to the Profit Your Knowledge podcast. Today's guest is Erica Curry. She is a licensed therapist helping athletes through mental blocks, injury, and retirement from sport. Something cool about Erica is that she's been a licensed therapist for 7-8 years now. It's been a while. And she finally took the leap to start her own business a few months ago, and she's still crushed it. She has like 10, 11 clients. So it's going to be cool just to hear about how she kind of took the leap and everything, along with how she's helping these different clients in terms of mental health. So we'll definitely cover a lot of different aspects of mental health, because athletes, as we were talking before we hit record, are incredibly, not just competitive, but just perfectionists. And so are we as entrepreneurs. And don't lie, you are. You want your website to be perfect. You want your products to be perfect. And that causes you never to actually move forward with them. So we're going to cover a lot of different aspects of this. And I'm really excited. How are you doing today, Erica?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that introduction. I'm really excited to get to chatting. This will be fun.
Totally. And congratulations on taking the leap to kickstart your business, doing your own thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It has been exciting, scary, and I'm totally here for the journey. So
yeah, I love it. Yeah. I think Ed Milet, a big speaker guy, he said that the best like personal self-development journey you could ever take is entrepreneurship. And I was like, that is totally true.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I feel like that's only going to be more and more true for me as I get more into this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're off to a great start. I mean, you already have like 10, 11 or so clients. Like, it took me a long time. It took me years to finally figure out. And a lot of it, looking back, knowing what I know now, is just fear that would get in my way and trying to be perfect and look like I'm perfect and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. And plus I didn't come from 8 years of being in something similar before. I was in construction work and just went into coaching.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, but were you doing the exact same thing and just pivoting into it being your
own?
No,
for sure.
Probably not. Yeah. Right. And it's interesting that you say like fear stopped you, because literally fear communicates to us that we're either going to fight, flight, or freeze. So like, that makes a lot of sense that it would stop you, because that's fear operates.
Yeah. And it was such new territory for me when I first started. I was just like, I luckily had some coach certifications and they kind of gave me some guidelines, but my life and business has changed dramatically since then. But I'm grateful for that kickstart in the beginning. So speaking of kickstarts, Erica, tell me a little bit about what made you decide to, you know, leave therapy and get into being an entrepreneur and saying, I want to do my own thing. How did you kind of get into doing therapy and then now just helping like athletes? How did that kind of become your thing?
Yeah, that's a really awesome question. And I love the story. So the way that I got into therapy in general was, I always loved talking to people. Like my friends would always make fun of me and say like, I could talk to a wall and get that wall to open up. Like, it's just a passion of mine. And as I went through school, I majored in psychology, minored in Spanish, and I really enjoyed a lot of the courses that I took. And then I took like a class in marriage and family therapy, grief and loss, death and dying, like a lot of grief-oriented stuff. And I was like, I really like this. And then I had a lot of just mental health related things going on, like struggling with my own anxiety, and then had a close family member who was struggling with making some attempts to end their own life. So I was really just like pulled in the direction of like, how is mental health being handled and how can I be part of the solution? So that going on in my personal life, coupled with what I was studying in school, along with being a college athlete and noticing that so much emphasis was put on our physical performance and mental performance wasn't so much of a focus, got me thinking like, why is it that way? So I decided I wanted to become a therapist, found a trauma and grief program, went through that. I spent a couple years in community mental health and then spent a year in working in all levels of care for addiction. And then I went to a DBT center where I was at for a couple of years. And that's where I really made the pivot into, I always wanted to be a therapist to work with athletes and like give back to this community that gave me so much. It gave me friendships that have lasted a lifetime, skills that have transcended into my career and just how I operate as a person, and has given me my values and a lot of purpose in life. So I took all the steps I needed to become a therapist. And then when I was working at my last job, we actually got the opportunity to work with an athletics department at one of the major universities nearby. I was so excited. I was like, this is it. It's like, I've done all the things I'm supposed to do. And look, the universe is handing this to me. Like, I'm going to get to work with athletes finally. To make a long story short, they didn't go with me and they picked a different therapist at this job. To put it lightly, I was angry. Okay? I was really upset because I love my coworker who got to have this position because they were looking for someone who was well versed in eating disorders. My background is like addiction, community mental health, and then also just being injured as an athlete, having difficulty transitioning out of sport, dealing with chronic pain. Because that's my lived experience. So I was like, you know what? I get why they didn't pick me. And I'm still very, very upset because this is all I've ever wanted to do. And I realized like what my anger was communicating to me was I just got blocked from the biggest goal that I have for myself in my career. Like just hard stop. And really what it came down to was a technicality. It's not that they didn't want to work with me. It's that they didn't have it in their budget to have another licensed therapist. So I was like, are you kidding me? And since I worked for somebody else, I didn't have the control over how much that costed. So I was like, so my hands are just tied and I didn't get a say in it. And basically getting blocked in that way just created change in me. It was enough frustration, tension, and discomfort for me to say something's got to give and I need to put myself on the track to live my dream. So that's what got the ball rolling. And I think it only took 7 months from that point that I finally started just working for myself and really going all in on supporting athletes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Wow. It's crazy how one little thing can just change everything. I remember when I was in construction work, I still didn't really know what coaching was. But I would follow some people who were like doing coaching online and I would buy their products and everything and just learn from them and many different like relationships, you know, health and different stuff like that. Cause I just love personal development. And I remember that they were like getting ready to lay people off of this job and just kind of giving people busy work. So it was in a skyscraper in San Francisco and there's like the pipe goes through the floor to like the, to basically supply the air conditioners and stuff like that. And that you have to seal the pipes with like this putty and add this 2-inch spatula in this 5-gallon bucket. And this stuff has like, what is it? Fiberglass inside of it. So when it gets on your skin, it just itches and it sticks to you and it's really uncomfortable. And I had knee pads and I was just on my knees for like 2 weeks, just filling in these holes. It was so much. And it was like, they're just keeping me busy. And that period of time is where I was fed up. I'm like, dude,
that's like cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah. Oh, dude, it was crazy. Like the guy who was the general foreman of the job, he was kind of like, he was just kind of crazy, but he would just like, yeah, make you suffer and like whatever. And it was just weird. And it was just like hard for no reason. And it's kind of like how my dad was and stuff. And just all this stuff just collected in that moment. And I literally just threw the spatula down. And I was like, this is bull. Like, I am going to find something different. There's got to be another way to make money, you know, that pays as much because I made good money and I had really good benefits and stuff. It's like, I can take care of myself as good as I can from this job, if not better, and find something I truly enjoy. And that's kind of what kickstarted the whole research phase. And then I went into finally figuring out about coaching. I was like, this is my thing. So yeah, that's a little story about me. But with Erica, you decided like, I'm going to start to leave this. And, I mean, you left, it's been a couple months now that you finally started and you have 10 to 11, something like that clients. Where did you kind of find these people and how did you transition into starting your own thing? And did they find you through therapy and were like, I want to follow you no matter what? Like, how did that kind of work?
Yeah, so it's a mixture of a couple of things. So I have, like I said, I love talking to people. So I've made connections over the years where literally people will meet someone like all other therapists I've met or just different companies I've connected with, or even just like, I don't know, people I meet when I go to like yoga on the beach who like we start hitting it off. Well, if they have my information and they come across someone who's looking for therapy, they'll just give them my information and we get connected that way. I also know, like, you saw me on Psychology Today, so like I'm listed on there. I also am like, I try to really post on TikTok a lot. I'm on Instagram. And then, yeah, my last job, the way that it works in therapy is you have to ethically give clients their options on what they can do if you're leaving your job. So clients can either A, stay at the company that you are paired with at the time and get reassigned to a different therapist. They can B, go find a new therapist altogether, which I did some very specialized work. So we really don't encourage people to do that because it's going to be hard to find another therapist who does what I do. And then lastly, C, they have the option to stay with me and follow me into my practice as long as I know that I can adequately care for them. So if I know there's someone who's dealing with some significant risk issues that I don't feel comfortable supporting on my own, I may recommend that they stay with the company I was at. But other than that, I did have a handful of clients who they're like, no, I have a relationship with you and I want to stay with you.
Totally.
So that's about the different ways. And like, yeah, I'm on LinkedIn and stuff. And interestingly, therapists really are not on LinkedIn. So it's just not somewhere you're gonna find us. But there's some of us.
Yeah, sure. I think it's actually a good spot to be on, honestly, because there's like companies that could hire a therapist to come in and
True.
yeah.
I just never even looked into it because it's like it's interesting. It's like therapists are in this like bubble. But like we
Right.
do, it's like we just kind of are taught what we're taught and we don't branch out because in school they don't teach us anything about having a private practice, owning a small business, nothing. Everyone assumes you're gonna go work for somebody else and that's it. And it's really not the case. A lot of us are in private practice and then we really struggle to figure out how to market ourselves, how to do our taxes, like all the businessy
Sure.
side of stuff
You're like,
can
I'm
be
good at
really
the
hard.
therapy thing, but
Yeah.
right. So when you're working with your clients now, would you consider yourself still a therapist or more of a coach? And what's your take on like the difference? Because this is a huge blurry area of like, are you a therapist or a coach or a consultant? Like, I don't know.
It is such a blurry area. And I started, so in the state of California, if the client lives in this state, I'm a therapist. I am their therapist. They sign paperwork that attests to I am treating you, being a licensed therapist. Now, I cannot do that in other states unless I'm licensed there. And right now, I'm only licensed in California. So, I do provide services outside this state, but I have to say I'm a coach. So, the
Interesting.
biggest difference is if I'm working with someone outside the state of California, it's under a completely different business. It is not the same as my therapy business. And I will not work with someone who's experiencing serious risk issues. Like if they're really considering ending their lives, dealing with self-harm, significant addiction, eating disorder, homicidality, visual auditory hallucinations, then no, I will not act as that person's coach because a coach does not. It's just like it's not going to look at if things go poorly for that individual. And it's like, oh, well, they were under the care of a coach. Like, no. But like, it's on me because I know what I care about at the end of the day is really helping people build their life worth living and live into their purpose. I cannot do, I they need more support than
Yeah.
what the title of coach gives. But yeah, if it's just someone who's like, I'm really struggling to transition. I was an athlete my whole life and now I just don't really know what's going on, or I really struggle with pain, or I'm injured right now and just don't know how to cope. Those are things that I'm like, yeah, we can absolutely work on that. And they get my same therapist brain. Everything's the same. I just can't legally call myself a therapist in that state.
Interesting. But the work is still the same, correct? Yeah. It's really
Mentally,
interesting.
same. Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause what I always heard when I was in my coach certification is that, you know, therapy would tend to focus on more of kind of the past, less than coaching, which is coaching is more like forward focused and more on the like what's your dream? What's your goal for 2024? And then helping you move forward towards that, where therapy moves backwards more. Is that correct? 'Cause you're a therapist. So.
I would say no.
Interesting.
So
Okay.
and
I was lied to. It's okay.
it depends on what type of therapist you are. Now, If I was a psychodynamic therapist, I would say 1,000%. Yes, we go back into the past and I want to know what daddy issues you have that made you this way. Like that's more of that. And then there's different like gestalt therapy, union therapy, all of that is gonna be more past oriented. And then the therapy I do, because I'm a dialectical behavioral therapist, a cognitive behavioral therapist, and a radically open dialectical behavioral therapist. All of that, like even what we're going for, and my biggest question is, what would make your life worth living? Like, what is your purpose? Because also classically in therapy, it's like, what are your goals? And it's usually to have less anxiety, to have less depression. I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. I love that we want to go for that. But I want to know, what do you want to do? Not what do you want less of, what do you want more of in your life that will let you know therapy has been a success and you are living the life you want to live? Like one of my clients, I was just talking to him and he was like, if I could have a European trip traveled in the next 6 months and not feel nervous about it, this will have been a success. And I'm like, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. Because if we're able to do that, then yeah, we know that anxiety has decreased. Cool. That's usually not the point. The point is, what can we add to our life? So for me, the answer is no, we don't go to the past so much. That does help inform my work. And I do with my clients who are in California, we do work on trauma and stuff. So we have to go to the past. And really, we do keep our eye focused on like, why are we doing this all again? What will make this meaningful? And it's for what their ultimate goal is and what they want to see their life like.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Totally. And yeah, when you said it depends on the type of therapy, that totally makes sense. Like if someone had, with you, for example, I mean, you talk, one of the issues is if I was an athlete and I had a sports injury and that's causing a lot of like anxiety for me, right? Is that something where you would kind of go back to the past? And if it was like kind of a intense incident that happened?
Yeah. And I mean, even for that, because I remember, because I actually did when I was a freshman in college, I broke both of my hands at the
Oh my
same
God.
time. And
Oh
it
my
was,
gosh.
yeah, I hit the diving board really, really hard. And I was so anxious about doing that dive again. And I had to, like, the degree of difficulty was really high. So it was like, if I'm gonna be competitive, I need to do that. And so, yes, anxiety was super high. And then there was also like just coping with being in pain. And like, even to this day, when it's cold outside, my hands hurt. It's like, just it is what it is. But yeah, like, I know I wish that I would have had access to getting support with that mental piece and being able to learn something like just mindfulness practices in addition to meditation. Because I feel like meditation is often like given as like, oh, one size fits all, that's mindfulness. Where like in reality, there's a lot of different ways to practice mindfulness to help with anxiety, as well as just distress tolerance skills. Meaning like when it feels unbearable, if someone's feeling like their emotional intensity is a 7 out of 10, I'm not going to ask them to zen out. Like that's
For
not
sure.
realistic. Like, come on now. Where it's like, no, I needed other options when it comes to like being able to weigh the pros and the cons, or being able to do like an ice dive or some paired muscle relaxation, intense exercise. And there's a handful of things, or it's self-soothing would have been a big one too. That would have been really helpful for me. So I basically was able to look at all my past experiences, especially when it came to injury, and be like, these are all the things that I wish I would have had. And now I get to give that to other people.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. I mean, if you broke both your hands at one time, God forbid, like that is intense. That would make me so anxious about going forward. I almost died skydiving, and I'm not going to get crazy deep into the story, but I ran into power lines and then fell from the power lines and landed like 30 feet, you know, pretty high. It broke through them, literally snapped across my chest. Fell down, landed on my side on a vineyard row, and then hit the ground. And I didn't break a bone or anything, but I had muscle pain. So luckily, I work out because I had some muscles that helped me somehow. But like, yeah, it's crazy. I didn't get kebabbed by the by
Seriously.
like the spikes that hold up the vineyard row. I landed in the wires and like the bush, I guess, that goes in between, like right in between them. And they're like 6 feet apart, so not that far apart for what happened.
You're talking near death experience right there.
Oh yeah. But then people were like, "Oh, so you're done jumping." And like I didn't explode and there were live power lines apparently. Like somehow they just didn't touch each other or something happened. I don't know. I wasn't grounded. It was crazy. And yeah, people were like, So yeah, I guess you're done skydiving. I was like, no, I'll probably go again. But it still took me like a solid month. And I remember that first jump coming back. I was so nervous. I didn't do anything crazy. I just like jumped out, but I knew that I had to do it because I still had such a passion for it. And I feel like that totally makes sense. We're having somebody there to kind of help you process it mentally, to like you going back to the diving board. Like, I'd be terrified. Yeah. Am I going to break my wrists again? Are they weaker now? Like, I don't know. Uh-huh. It's wild.
And it's true though. It is important to kind of like get back on the horse and like do the thing, or else your fear can grow. Like, the only way to keep it like at bay and to not let fear rule your world is to, and even if you don't go back to all of it completely, like I know I went through like a series of like, I did a lot of lead ups, like jumping in a certain way and then only doing one flip instead of one and a half. And like, it's basically like a hierarchy that you can go through to diminish the fear.
Yeah, progression.
I couldn't imagine what you went through. I could feel the fear just hearing about it. That's like,
it was pretty wild. So, I mean, that applies to, you know, when you're getting your business going. Like, I remember my first sales call and it was so uncomfortable, and I remember having all my paperwork out, and it was just like my script and everything on my bed, and I was so nervous, and the guy didn't sign up. And you know, a lot of people, they can let their like insecurities get in the way, and then that crushes them, and then they can never do one again, and they just kind of give up. But like, you have to get back on the horse, like if you want that thing, like if you wanted to be a competitive diver in this example, or me, a skydiver. Like, you have to push through the mental blocks that get in the way when things don't go the way you think they're going to, or not for the better. So
yeah,
that's huge.
That reminds me of, I'm listening to a book right now called Grit by Angela Duckworth. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
It's reminding me, it's kind of like speaking to what you're saying. So she talks about like how to be a gritty person and basically reach your goals. And she has this theory, and it's an equation where she says it doesn't only take talent. Like, you need more than talent when it comes to anything. And she says it's like talent times effort equals skill. Skill times effort will equal achievement. Mm. And it's true. It's like, you have to have that skill and then multiply it by putting forth that effort. And that could mean doing something that's scary over and over again, even if you mess up at it time to time.
Yeah. That's anything. That's doing like sales calls and charging the most you've ever charged in your life, or raising your prices. If you've been in business for a while, that's another thing. I remember when I first raised my prices, like a couple thousand dollars, I was like, oh, can I do it? And then it just became normal. And I'm like, this is like cheap for what I'm giving people, you know, and the results that they were getting, obviously. So it's a never ending progression. Something you mentioned that I do want to talk about is that when working with athletes, a common thing that you see or notice about athletes is how they are perfectionists. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, how do you kind of coach or therapize? I don't know what the term is, but how do you help athletes process through perfectionism? How does that show up for them? And yeah, how do you help them get through it, basically?
Yeah, I think one of like the biggest things that just comes to mind to me is having, when a routine becomes a ritual. Like, I'm sure even in movies and stuff, like, you know, how like baseball players or football players, gymnasts, like they'll be like, I have to like tap the bat on home plate 3 times and then I can go. It's like, there's this threshold where like a routine becomes a ritual, and a routine is cool. That's something that like helps you feel like you're ready for the competition. You're going to be great for it. A ritual is like, if anything in your routine goes wrong, and that means the whole competition is going to go wrong, or you're not going to be able to perform. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Where did we come up with that belief? And what state of mind are we in? Because that's definitely not a flexible state of mind, because we can't expect things to go off without a hitch all the time. So we're likely either in a fixed mindset or a fatalistic mindset. And sometimes it's a combination of both, like hopping between the two. And a fixed mindset is basically saying, this is the rule. Things have to go this way. There is no other way to do it. Like, this is how I prepare. And if one thing gets in the way, I'm not doing it. Mm-hmm. And then fatalistic mind is saying, so this one thing went wrong. What's the point? Why am I even going to try? like waving the white flag. And this is, and fatalistic mind is where a lot of self-fulfilling prophecies start coming into play. And it's kind of like that quote that's like, whether you think you can or you can't,
you're right.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Henry like, Ford.
You can't.
Right. Yeah. Why do you think that shows up for athletes so much?
It's a lot of, I know for me, just my own lived experience was just the pressure to perform. And I was an athlete that was always scored, because before I was a diver, I was a gymnast. So I was always scored on like a 0 to 10 scale. The goal is quite literally perfection. So
as a gymnast, kinda, especially too, and a diver, both of them, it's like precision.
Exactly. So it's so easy to fall into either of those extreme mindsets, because it is like, well, if you're not going to get it perfectly, then who even cares? Ooh, rough. Like, and don't get me wrong, I would, when I got sevens and eights, like basically it was kind of like anything like 6.5 and higher, I'd be like, all right, sweet. But like, it was hard, because it was like the goal is literally perfection. And then the fixed state of mind is really just saying, that's a fixed scale. And like, this is how life goes. And then you couple that with things like school is often on a fixed scale, right? Because we have like a grading system, and it's when we have like rigid rules that we get really frazzled or just stressed out when anything comes in to mess with that.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to being rigid.
Yeah. Yeah. So I talk to a lot, you know, with coaching clients and working with people and stuff, like every day I'm talking to people, and I hear it so much when it comes to someone starting their online business, or if they want to create an online course, that is a huge one. And they're like, I'll tell them, like, if I were restarting, I'd be like, just go out there and start helping people. Talk to the people you can help about the thing you can help them do. Like, and then offer to help them if it makes sense, you know, like connect, inspire, invite. That's what I know now. And that's what I would do if I started. And it's just by, like, the way you build a coaching, a business or a service business is by talking to people, you know, the right people. Where if you want to work with athletes, then go hang out with athletes, go where they are and just start up conversations and talk to them and just kind of see where the conversation goes, but offer help where is needed. And, like, people don't like the simplicity of that, but like, I see people making things more complicated. They're like, but I have to have this perfect website and I have to have online courses before I can make an offer. And I'm like, building an online course isn't just like you can make them fast, but if you want to have a good one, like the way you build a really good one is by working with people one-on-one and then building the course for them. And then it becomes a self-paced program. So you're just like being efficient with everything instead of treating it like a separate project. But people
get like input along the way too, which is really cool.
And you know, it's based on what real people really want related to whatever the topic of the course is, because you're helping people. That's what I do with my most recent course, which is going to be launching soon, by the way. But I have a handful of clients going through the process and I'm building the course for them. And I'm making it generic. I'm not saying, hey, like, Steve, this is for you. I'm just keeping it that in this lesson, we're going to cover this. And that makes it a self-paced program. So it's like little things like that make it to where you can kind of, and I know people get anxious about this, but like build the plane while you're flying it, you know, or the tracks before the train.
Yeah.
Well, but that causes people to get anxious. Yeah.
And I remember I always had a coach that would tell me, keep it simple, stupid.
Yep. Like, it's true.
It doesn't have to be overcomplicated. And that's, it is tough. And perfectionists, we get caught up in that. Overthinkers, perfectionists, we're going to get caught up in that. And also, because another thing that I really deal with is like rumination, like ruminating over a performance, ruminating over a social interaction. And how can we use mindfulness or use self-inquiry to be able to give ourselves a break? You can't, it's like when something's done, it's done, and we have to learn how to put it to bed. It's kind of like making those sales calls or having an initial conversation. It's easy to walk away and be like, all right, so I need to go review that entire performance of what I said, how it went. It's like, hang on now. It already happened. What's done is done. And it's just, it's not always as simple to just say, oh, what's done is done. And that's where like, I do teach people skills on how to accept that what's done is done and like let the cards fall where they may. It'll be
right. What's like a quick thing that you do for people in terms of like perfectionism, maybe a sales call, you know, for the listener doesn't go well, or you know, I don't know what it is, anything related to perfectionism, but is there something that you tell your clients?
Yeah, participate without planning is something that I teach, which means you go ahead and throw yourself into what it is that you're doing, especially like with what we're talking about. Whatever the person starting the business is doing, they already know how to do it. You don't need to overcomplicate it by rereading your script over and over and over again. You got to participate without planning, saying, yeah, I know that I have this call at 10 o'clock. That is like as much planning as I want you doing. After that, I need you to trust your own instincts, because our bodies, when we allow ourselves to openly participate, it's like a skillful dancer on the dance floor. There's this flow about it where it's like, have you ever gotten lost in doing something you really enjoy?
Oh yeah. I play drums and yeah,
exactly. Get lost in it. Exactly. We can learn to participate like that in our daily lives. And so for people who struggle with ruminating, overthinking, or they're perfectionists, participating with planning is an important practice to incorporate so that you can start getting used to that feeling and trusting that. And then you build trust in yourself. You start to build more of a strong sense of identity and you're better for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually funny you mentioned that, because I totally agree. I think the preparation is important, but too much preparation is a thing, which is interesting. It, depending on what it is, it can definitely be a thing when it comes to this kind of stuff, especially with like, you know, sales calls or things like that, or building an online course too. Like the idea is to get a baseline and then get it out there. And then as you get people into it or you test it with people, then you can upgrade it down the road, but start with good enough and then move on. Same thing when you're writing copy or website, get it good enough and then see what's happening. Are people actually like staying on the website? Are they, you know, converting into something? And then you can make adjustments from there. But with drumming for me, I remember I was taking it way too serious. This is before business. And I thought that I was going to be like rock star. I am a rock star, but I thought that that was going to be like my career. That's what for a phase, I wanted that to be a thing. And I remember playing a show and it just like, I don't know. I was just getting way too serious leading up to this. And then something happened. I don't remember what it was, but it just was kind of like made my day really bad. And then I had a show that night and it was just kind of weighing on me. And I thought, you know what? I just want to play my show and just have fun. And the word fun was just there. And I just had fun. I just had a good time, played the drums, and I got lost in it. And people were coming up to me afterwards like, dude, you're such a good drummer. Like, that was amazing. And it sounded so good. And it felt so good. And it was awesome. And then I just started, every time I play a show, I was like, that was so fun and cool that I just kept saying, like, just have fun. Like, just go out and have a good time. If it's onto a sales call, like, just have fun. If you're making copy or you know, an online course or whatever it is, like, just have fun. If you're coaching your client, just have fun with it. And that for me just made me approach it in a lighter way and it made it more fun. And then because I'm having fun, it shows in everything else that I do. So
that was huge. You nailed it. And it is true. It is like the difference. And like you said, it needs to be good enough, right? So it's like, and like, what does that mean though? So you have to be very honest with yourself when something is honestly good enough. It's not perfect. There will be mistakes. It just does honestly have to be good enough. And then like when you, because perfectionists, overthinkers, we're going to have the urge to over prepare and keep doing it. And even with that, it's like, okay, so how do we urge surf? You got to surf the urge to over prepare and go correct all those tiny details. And how do we urge surf? You got to be able to, like in the therapy world, we call it activating your social safety system. It just means you got to be able to soothe yourself so that you bring your heart rate back down so that you are able to connect with other people. And when we're in our social safety system and relaxed, we have more access to our decision-making center, like the front part of our brain. And we need that if we're going to be effective. So it's really important to catch yourself over preparing, surf that urge by self-soothing so that you can bring your front brain back online.
Love it. Awesome. Erica, we're going to come in here for a landing, but I want to know, where can people learn more about you and get connected?
Yeah. So I can be found on TikTok and Instagram. I'm Erica Curry, LMFT. And then I also have a podcast with my co-host, and that is available on Spotify. It's called Bend Don't Break, Living Flexibly. And on there, we talk about life as an athlete, the transition, as well as disordered eating. So that's where you can find me.
Sweet. We'll put some links down in the description. For the listener, we talked about a lot of things. And Yeah, I mean, the perfectionism thing is definitely a topic I really want to dive into, especially with Erica, because whether you're an athlete or you're an entrepreneur, you're kind of an athlete in a way where it's just a little bit different, but it's very similar, the crossover there. And we want things to be perfect. You know, we want to be professional. We want to be seen as professional to the world. And because, you know, when you're a professional, then more people want to work with professionals. So I totally get it. But at the same time, like if you just care and your energy, and like we're talking about with if you're just like gripping, like white knuckling the outcome, then it's going to show and people are going to be like, I don't know, there's something weird about you. But if you're just go with the flow and you have an intention, this is called high intention, low attachment, is it's an amazing mindset principle that I just follow all the time with everything that I do, and just like get things good enough and then get out there, test things, and then you can reassess from there and just use it as feedback. You don't have to shoot yourself down for that. So if you can learn and practice more of that, then you are going to be way more successful and you're going to have a ton more fun, guaranteed. So remember that implementation is your only superpower. Take what you learned here, get out there, make something happen. We'll see you in the next one.